What were the living conditions of a sailor like? Such things as food preparation in the galley, the pay, or sanitation, the housing, etc. Things like this.
Well, depended on the ship largely and on the line. There's some had a reputation for putting up excellent meals, and there were other ships and lines that were putting their starvation class. Oh, I wouldn't say that exactly, but they didn't have anything.
Mild famine.
Yeah. By and large, they were always pretty liberal in their food. Even accommodations weren't so. Every ship sailor had his own special bunk, you know. They were quartered there. And the change of bedding was always weekly anyway, and clean linen.
Did all sailors sleep in one room?
Well, the deckhands and the ordinary seamen had about 4 or 5 bucks to a room, you know. But the watchmen and the quartermasters or wheelsmen and the mates, they were all doubled up for two to a room, you know, staterooms. They had upper and lower bunks, beds they built in. Conditions, I would say this was very, very good compared with some places that I've experienced on salt water. The English were notorious in adhering to the British Board of Trade Fair. That was the schedule that it was pretty economical. And they adhered to that. They didn't. Plum Duff on Sunday was quite a treat. And that was just a boiled pudding, you know, or raisins in it or something. There wasn't very much dessert served. But it largely depended upon the steward. Stewards, some of them took pride in serving, just seeing how good a table they could set, you know. But they had to keep within limits of the masters.
Steward was the cook and the waiter, or what? What was it?
The steward was he supervised the cooking. There was a cook, there was a second cook in the quarters, so on the waiters. The steward had charge of the ordering of the groceries, provisions. And he had to submit his order to the captain before it was okay. Grocery would deliver these stores to the ship.
What would be the pay schedule for, say, a common seaman all in
1910 would be.
Oh, well, when you started as a sailor, what would it be?
Oh, I started long before that. $25 a month. Found that was your bed and board. It was about what you got. But average, and then just 45 in the fall. And after the 1st of November, 65 to the close of navigation. But those terms are okay today. They are out of tune because seamen today, even ordinarily, just from what I get, learn, get $200 or $300 a month. Some attractive positions right now. Seafaring.
What was the sanitation? Did they have regular facilities on aboard ship like they did in the house?
Yes. Firemen, I suppose. They were much cleaner than the brothers short. Because every time they come out of watch, they took a shower. They had to put there, you know, and clean beds and linen. And they wouldn't want to step into the shower. The shower's adjacent to their quarters. So they're well clean. Oh, I'll say that there's exceptions, of course. Now, if you want to go on to an old schooner that had none of these, and there were some of them yet around at that time, and they used a bucket for the disposal of excreta and everything else, and was dumped overboard, refilled.
Although you were not in the Great Storm of 1913, did you hear many stories about us, Jerry?
Well, I've had quite a number of them. I've listened to them. I couldn't repeat them all. It'd take too much time. But I will say this, that the particular vessel that I was second mate on, the D.O. Mills at that time, and I got up the trip before, she went aground above Harbor Beach Breakwater. And the mate said that it was the luckiest thing in the world that she did go down, because she was beginning to crack the deck plates, the shear streak on her deck, and she was, the rivet heads were snapping off on the cargo hold. Ship, the D.O. Mills, the master of her was James Jackson from Sackett's Harbor, New York. And he was an excellent sailor, a navigator. I wouldn't say a navigator, a pilot. I'd say that many years' experience in some of the best boats. But the storm was such a fury that lost all means of reckoning anyway, you know. And he supposed that he was off, oh, somewhere the other side of Saginaw Bay, around Tawas Point or in there somewhere. He didn't know where he was. Couldn't see anything, couldn't hear anything. The mate told me afterwards that they blew that whistle continuously and it failed, and I don't think they ever heard it. That's the whistle for this. The fog whistle. Three blasts, and I don't, every minute. I don't think they heard it once. He says it, but anyway, in the pilot house was that. And the wind gauge blew away after a certain time. They don't know how far it was blowing, but there was a hurricane force anyway. This was a hurricane, wasn't a tornado. It was a hurricane that lasted 24 hours or so.
How fast was the wind gauge calibrated to?
Oh, I think it was about 65, 70 miles an hour. They were way at that time, anyway.
How would you prepare a ship for such a fasten everything down?
Well, the only thing we could do would be to fasten everything down so secure as could be, you know. Look at your, see if their balls are down so they won't heave. The ship will pitch a little. And sometimes the windlass gives out to you. The right wheel on the windlass, the gear wheel will give your chain run out. So that's to prevent that. Blocks and the halls that were about that. And you've got to have everything that's movable and lashed down furniture and everything. You have chairs in the stateroom, so you've got to put plenty of rope around there. If you've got time, that's one of the duties of the stewards department, to lash everything down inside because the deck crew's got all they can do outside. So many things. It's just common sense to everything secure is cooked. That's some substance of it.
Do you feel that sailing changed much from when you started as a young man until your retirement?
Well, that's quite a question. I would say that it's changed a great deal. You went back to the time that I started sailing, compared with present-day methods, you would be lost. The gyro pilot, the gyro compass, the course recorder, the fathometer, the steering gear, automatic steering, all those things have come in since my time at first. And some of them, after I had left the radar, for instance, communication, ship to shore was just coming in when the telephone ship to shore service was just breaking in when I loading, when vessel loading is altogether different than it was years ago, too. So much simpler. I know docks are instructed now to place the cargo, put there anywhere in the ship without shifting it. Drop down the dock, you know, and they can ship the cargo wherever they want it. It rolls right to the edge.
Of course, the salaries change. I imagine that they have perhaps different type of job on the ship. The mates would probably have a different new position.
Well, speaking of positions, some very attractive positions. Right now, the qualified men that are junior officers, I would say, getting around 8,000 to 9,000 a season. Masters from 16 to 20, that's your season work, and the engineer's department is likewise boosted up. There's a school there, what they're aiming for, and the old-time board of supervising inspectors, vessel inspectors, that's out today. This is all under the Coast Guard. And the object is to have college-trained men that are officers of these vessels. For instance, a master with a vessel of costing, $2 or $3 million. Before she buttered. And then she's launched and you have a cargo of an equal amount of, as quite a responsibility there. And in comparison with the jobs ashore, with the same rate of money, the shore man is, I suppose, gets the best of it, but the pay is pretty good. The object is, this is a maritime institute now, I am informed up at Traverse City. They complete the course there, it's 2 or 3 years, and bachelor's degree in something. And this is, depends on whether you select the deck department or deck duties or engineering. But it needs a degree, and that's what they are aiming for. These ships are getting much larger every year, 1,000 feet now, some of them. instead of having two or four or five firemen and a couple of men in the boilers and firemen just to turn on the valves for the fuel and take care of all that.
Is there anything else that you can think of that might be interesting?
Oh, I don't think there's much interesting here that I've told. I hesitated so much with it. But if you can make anything out of it, it's all right. I could tell sea stories, incidents, you know. And I could take you up there for 4 or 5 hours just relating things that happened, but I don't think it's feasible at this stage.
Well, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Harrington.